Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Tim Wakefield, the 44-year-old knuckleballer who's been employed by the Boston Red Sox since 1995, began his pro baseball career as a minor league first baseman in the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. Sometimes he threw knuckleballs to his teammates to baffle them. It was all in fun until a coach told him that the only way he could avoid being released was to become a knuckleball pitcher for real. So he did that. And in his rookie year, he went 8-1 for the Pirates and won 2 games in the World Series. The following year, he was 6-11, and that was that for Wakefield the Pirate. Back in 95, he began throwing knuckleballs at Fenway Park, which is where I spoke with him after a recent rainout. I began our conversation by asking about one particular passage in Knuckler, Tim Wakefield's recently released autobiography written with Tony Maserati, a passage in which Wakefield says, "The knuckleball is me."
It's what got me here. It's what I've lived and died with. It's, you know, I ate it, I drank it, I slept with it. It is me.
He also writes, at an early age, Tim Wakefield learned that the knuckleball could be a weapon, something used to fluster people, even to make them quit. And it's an interesting proposition. Is the knuckleball really more likely to make people quit than, say, a hellacious, you know, curveball or a fastball that comes in at 99 miles an hour?
Yeah, I think it frustrates guys more than somebody throwing 100 or throwing a really nasty curveball. I think what we meant by that quote was, you know, I used it as a weapon at a young age because I used to throw it to teammates or friends and they could never catch it. And
this is just playing catch.
This is just playing catch. And that's actually how I got recognized, is just playing catch. And, you know, it became my weapon. It became my source of survival, so to speak, you know, I was on my way out. I was going to be released. And my coach, Woody Heike, saw it in me and it became what I needed to survive.
Did you know that this was going to be something that was going to enable you to survive?
Not at that point, no. I was a little reluctant to give up hitting after I only spent a little over a year trying to hit, and it wasn't my choice. They said either convert to a pitcher or you're going to get released. So I quickly changed my mind and my attitude at that point and started pitching and fell in love with it. You know, I had pitched in high school and never in college. I always wanted to be that big, strong, power-hitting first baseman that hits lots of home runs and all that stuff, but it quickly changed my mind.
Do you ever find yourself sitting in the bullpen or the dugout thinking, man, I'd like to just at least go out and take some batting practice?
Batting practice would be fun, but I do not miss hitting at all. You know, the higher levels that I rose even as a pitcher, I saw how hard it was for regular position players to not only learn their position and defense, but also to hit.
Plus, you might face a knuckleball.
I have actually faced a knuckleballer. Tom Candiotti and I faced each other when I was with the Pirates in 1992, and it wasn't very fun trying to hit off him either.
You played some serious basketball. I understand that you're an excellent golfer. All-around athletes, did you have any kind of idea ever of making a life in a sport other than baseball?
No. You know, I was good at a lot of things, but I wasn't as good as I was in baseball when I was younger. And baseball was my passion. Became very aware of that at a young age, that it's something that I fell in love with. I played every other sport, and baseball was my passion.
Has it remained a passion? Passions sometimes fade over the years, and you've had a good many of them.
It has. You know, it's one of those things, and I tell guys this all the time, as many opening days or as many times as I've taken them out here at Fenway or on the road, I still get butterflies. And, you know, it's veteran guys before me had told me, when you lose that feeling, it's probably time that you go home. But I still have that fire in my belly, and I still want to compete. I still have fun doing it, and I still have that passion.
Of your experience with the Pirates, the beginning of your major league career, you say, "I went from having 2 months in the big leagues to being the starting pitcher on opening day." Even for a guy who's famous for his composure, at least now you are, that must have been extraordinary.
It was, you know, and I tell young kids this all the time, is that going through it and experiencing that, I went through the first 2 months of being in the big leagues, and I only lost one game, so I never really learned how to deal with failure at the big league level. I'd learned how to deal with it in the minor leagues, but it's a different animal when you get to the big leagues. And, you know, I had said this quote, it's from the movie Pure Country, when the country star decides that he doesn't want to be that dancing chicken on stage anymore, and he leaves and goes and sees his grandmother, and his grandmother made a quote, sometimes the tree grows too fast and you have to cut the limbs off to allow it to mature and grow bigger. And I think that's my experience when I got to the big leagues with the Pirates, had so much success so fast that I needed to learn how to deal with failure. And evidently, you know, ultimately it led to my release, but it was a great thing that I got to sign with Boston and kind of learn from that experience.
And when you talk about so much success so fast, this is the World Series right off the bat. You must have figured, well, this is how it's going to go.
I was hoping this is how it was going to go, but I quickly learned the following year that the game wasn't that easy.
You have been the beneficiary of numbers of tutoring sessions with the Negroes, or at least one of the Negroes. And I guess it's Phil Negro who said, knuckleball pitchers really have to be their own coach because pitching coaches don't really know what to do. You're shaking your head. Does that make you at all lonely in the bullpen? You can't go to the pitching coach for help, at least with the pitch you throw.
At times, it can get lonely, but for the most part, you got to be determined to know how to fix yourself when things go bad, and you got to have that confidence to know that you want to rely on a pitching coach. And I've told all my pitching coach my checkpoints, my mechanics. If you see something that's out of whack, please let me know. But for the most part, I've been left alone, and you know, through trials and tribulations, I've figured out what works best.
Do you use film at all?
I have used film. I don't like to look at it too much because you start digging too deep and you might find something that you don't want to find. So I base everything on feel and timing.
What do you mean you don't want to find, like, your beard is coming in a little gray or something?
That might work, or, you know, I need a haircut or something like that. But, you know, you start tinkering too much with mechanics, and then your thought process when you're out there competing turns to your mechanics instead of what you're trying to do, is that's to make a good pitch and a quality pitch and get it out.
Just has to happen.
You got to get out of your own way sometimes.
See, it strikes me that there's an illusion with a knuckleball pitcher. If you're in the stands watching a knuckleball pitcher throw, and of course you're not aware of all the movement that the pitch has because you're watching it from a bad angle and from far away, and you're thinking, man, that thing is coming up there so slowly. I've been a fast pitch softball player. I could hit that thing. And yet we watch major league hitters struggle eternally with it. It's a curious sort of phenomenon. It really is.
And I think it helps with the fans relate to me more because they'll sit in the stands and watch me throw and look at the radar gun and it says 65. And they say the same thing you just said. It's like, wow, I could probably do that. You know, but, you know, it's – you have to rely – you know, I remember – an old knuckleballer said you had to have the mind of a Zen Buddhist and the fingertips of a safecracker to throw a knuckleball. And the mind part is very true because when you're facing the best hitters in the world, you have to rely on movement, and you have to have the courage to throw a pitch up there at 65 miles an hour and hopefully they swing and miss.
Are you aware of hitters, opposing hitters, who kind of their eyes light up when you come in because they'd rather face you than, say, somebody throwing in the high 90s or somebody who can break off a curve, you know, right across their knees?
Not really. I actually get the other side of that spectrum when hitters look at me is they look in disgust, like, oh, no, we got to face him again. and it's kind of fun, too. But, you know, I've had guys tell me they've tried to change their approach. I've had switch hitters actually hit the opposite side, like a switch hitter would hit right-handed instead of left-handed off me because they're afraid they're going to mess up their left-handed swing if they face me left-handed.
Maybe for weeks.
For weeks. And I've been told that. And, you know, it's fun to hear those stories and to get other guys' perspective on facing me.
In the biography, you are characterized, and I'm quoting now, as willing as ever to fill a team need. But as this season has begun, and you've come into games with the Red Sox already behind 5 runs, behind 6 runs, whatever it might be, that can't be as much fun as it would be to start a game or come in with the game on the line?
No, and I consider myself a starting pitcher. That's because of the knuckleball and because of my versatility. I think it's not held against me. I think it's maybe take it for granted a little bit at times. And I think any other knuckleball will tell you the same thing. me as a starting, my biggest value as a starting pitcher is to give the club innings. And I think I've proven that over the past 17 years here, that when I'm in the starting rotation every 5 days, I'm going to give you 180 to 200 innings every single year. Unfortunately, with the situation here, we have five quality starters, and you know, I'm the odd guy out, but I'm willing to do whatever it takes to try to help us win. If mop-up innings are it, then that's what I have to deal with. I mean, it's my job, and you know, I'm part of this team, and I'm trying to help us win another World Series.
It was interesting for me to read that you considered it one of the highlights of your career when you got a particular message on a particular day from Joe Torre. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was pretty special. You know, I'd always had respect for Joe, not only as a player, you know, growing up watching him play for the Atlanta Braves for such a long period of time, but also playing against him as the manager for the New York Yankees. And you respected how he ran his team. You respected the respect that his players gave him, and never really got a chance to talk to him, just to say hello to him on the field. And after the 03 season, you know, I gave up the homer to Aaron Boone to lose and pushed him into the World Series. The following year, we make the greatest comeback in sports history, being down 3-0. And during our celebration, the phone actually rang in the clubhouse. And normally the clubhouse attendants or the clubhouse manager picks up the phone, and not thinking anything of it, you know, he waved me over, said, "Hey, the phone's for you." And when I picked it up, it was Joe Torre, and I was completely in awe that he was on the other line, but more so that he actually wanted to congratulate me personally, that, you know, he's very proud of my body of work and that he's witnessed over the long time that he was a manager for the Yankees, and he wanted to wish me luck and tell me to have fun.
And this was a guy whose team had just gotten knocked out of it.
Yeah, that says a lot about Joe Torre. That shows a lot about his professionalism and the respect that he has for the game.
Tim, successful knuckleball pitchers can have very long careers. No question about that. The list is long of mm-hmm. guys who've managed that. And I'm sure that you're very proud of the career that you are having. But I wonder what it's like to see everybody else in the clubhouse getting younger and younger each year.
There is a huge generation gap there, that's for sure. But, you know, I try to lead by example and not by my words. And if I can set a good example for a younger player, I'm more than happy to do that. And if they ever want to pick my brain, I'm always available in my locker for them to come talk about. You know, I can share some past experiences with them. You know, I've been through the ups and downs and the twists and the turns, and know what it's like to struggle and know what it's like to succeed and how to maintain that steady walk through a career.
I want to thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you very much.
My conversation with Tim Wakefield will be featured in this week's program. We'll also be examining the train wreck that the Los Angeles Dodgers have become. The team is now being run by Major League Baseball. We'll update the NBA and NHL playoffs, and we'll discuss with the editor of ESPN, the magazine, various intriguing facts he's turned up regarding athletes around the world and the money they make. Only a Game's Doug Trabu will tell you everything you've always wanted to know about korfball, and, in the case of most of you, more. And, of course, Charlie Pierce will be present to comment on the week's news. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.